0-2 pitch. Swing and a miss. Knocked him out. The Philadelphia Phillies are 2008 World Champions of Baseball.
It's Wednesday, May 20th, 2015. Welcome to the Philly Press Box Radio Roundtable, brought to you by shopforkisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. I'm Bill Furman. I'll be your host tonight, along with my partner, Jim Chetchesko. Chet, we have a bunch to talk about with 76ers Insider and special guest D. Lynam coming up. We have Flyers news this week with the hiring of head coach Dave Hextall. And what about those red-hot Phillies?
Yeah, the Eagles taking a backseat to the city's other three teams for a change this week anyway. But, yeah, Bill, lots to talk about, including our 10-9-8 76ers, now that we know where they stand in terms of the first round of next month's draft. So we have a good show coming up.
All right, Jeff. Well, since we're on a tight schedule with D's time, we're going to put off our 76ers trivia question to win the signed 8x10 color rookie photo of former 76er Kyle Korver, courtesy Carl's Cards and Collectibles, until after we finish up our time with D. So let's get started by welcoming back D. Lynam to the Philly Press Box Radio Roundtable. D, it's always a pleasure.
How are you, gentlemen?
Hey, D. So you were there last night, and we know the Sixers now have the third pick in next month's draft. Before we talk about that and what maybe we should expect, let's review the 2014-15 season. Neither you nor I thought it was going to be a great season. I think you said, you know, maybe 15 wins or so at the beginning of the year when we had you on in October. I said 13 at the most, I believe. How would you review the 2014-15 season when they won 18?
I would say that they definitely improved defensively and kind of found a identity in wanting to be a defensive-minded group that will be that way year after year. It became clear that they are trying to identify some guys who can shoot the three-pointer. Obviously, getting a Robert Covington helped. Developing Jeremy Grant's outside shot certainly helped. But they still remain a team that struggles to shoot from the outside because there's just not enough shooters on that team. So I think the development of Nerlens Noel. I mean, I would be remiss if I didn't say that. And sometimes I take it for granted, but who he was after the All-Star break is, I think, everything that people would have wanted from him in a rookie season following a year where he didn't play basketball at all. Those are the things that I would identify, and yet they still had a revolving door with, for me, too many players that came through as the roster just continues to change and change and change.
You mentioned Nerlens and his development, especially after the All-Star game. 9.9 points on the year, 8.1 rebounds, and a team-leading 1.8 steals per game. He looks like he's going to be a player, doesn't he?
He does, especially what his unique skills are athletically. Obviously, his ability to guard the pick and roll, his steals would say there's something about him with his, you know, length or identifying when he can, you know, strip a guy. And just his presence at the rim. I mean, not all the time do you get the block, but you certainly chain shots as well. So if he could continue to develop offensively and bring a little more to that end of the table, then I think, you know, again, you've achieved what you wanted when you traded Drew Holiday, who was an All-Star, and got this kid who had been selected at number 6 in the draft.
Well, Dee, what was your take on the Michael Carter-Williams trade? Were you surprised at how that went down? And do you think that they left a hole, or do you think it's a good move that they're going to be able to fill and upgrade?
At the time that they made the move, yes, I was surprised. In hindsight, I guess when I look at it, that the fact that they are a team that defense and threes are going to be the two big things, I think, over time with them. And he wasn't a great shooter. Now, I think he's a very good NBA player, and we'll see what he does with his own career and what he does with Milwaukee and how that, you know, benefits him. But he's no longer here. They have not filled his void. As much as I enjoyed watching Ish Smith, that is not filling the void of what Michael Carter Williams is capable of and the player that he would have become. So they have to go out and get a higher-level point guard to be their starter by next season. And, you know, everybody has a different feel on, you know, essentially they were hoping that they would get the number 6 pick in the draft, which would have fallen to them if the Lakers fell out of that top 5 protected pick, which they did not. So I do think that the Lakers will come back and be a much better team next year. Next year that pick is top 3 protected. It's probably going to end up in the Sixers' lap, but it very well could be in the middle of that draft, certainly not, you know, a high lottery pick like the potential it had this year. So we'll see. That's one of them that you have to see how it plays out. And, you know, some would also say, I think there were a couple people today that said, by trading him, you ensured yourself of being able to get that number 3 pick because you ended up with the 3rd worst record. Maybe. I mean, they didn't have a great record when he was here. They just had too many young players this year. So maybe that's the case, but you do set yourself back of what you thought was a cornerstone. That cornerstone is gone, and that has not been replaced yet.
Speaking of young players, in addition to Nerlens Noel and watching him develop, one of the most pleasant surprises for me was the development of Robert Covington. 13.5 points a game, 4.5 rebounds, a respectable 37.5% from three-point range. He really took me by surprise. What's your take on Covington?
Yes, he definitely is what I would call a true shooter. When the ball leaves his hand, you just believe it's going in. And the fact that the kid went undrafted, and then on top of that, now I understand Houston kept him in their training camp last year right up till the end, but the fact that they were able to claim him off of, you know, or get him from the D-League, so to speak, is kind of amazing that all these other teams did not identify him with such an NBA skill, shooting a 3 the way he's capable of. So I think that was an excellent find for them. He definitely belongs in the NBA. On a good team, would he be a starter? I don't know, but he would definitely have a role and a prominent one coming off the bench, for sure.
All right.
Well, Dee, I have a question for you. Before we want to hit you big on the draft, because obviously this is a critical time, but before we get to that, I'd like to get your outlook on the Nerlens Noel, Joel Embiid playing together next season. And obviously Embiid is still a little bit of a mystery to us, but what do you think? I mean, we're going to have some twin towers. Do you like what you see so far?
Well, I'd like to say I've seen it, and I have not. You know, I haven't had the luxury or pleasure of seeing them play in a real, not even a scrimmage together. I mean, Joel just hadn't done that up and through, you know, April when they were still playing. So I haven't seen it. I want to see it. I don't think we'll see it in the summer league because I don't think New Orleans will participate in that. Actually, I know he won't. And so, you know, it'll be in the fall. It'll be interesting. It'll be something for Brett to figure out. But I think he is, like, looking forward to the challenge of trying to find ways that those two can play together. If Embiid is what he was touted to be when he was coming out of Kansas, then, you know, you have a guy on the low block who is a big man. And, you know, if you can throw the ball inside and then you have shooters surrounding the perimeter, I like the concept a lot. And the thing about Nerlens, you never really wanted him to be a post-up guy anyhow, but he can still get out and run, and this team likes to run. And he's a finisher at the hoop, or even that Ish would find him with an alley-oop even in the half court. So I think it's possible for them to play together. Spacing will be key, not just with the perimeter guys, but with the two of them in the beginning. And I think that might be a bit of a transition because both are used to being 5 men, and now Nerlens is going to be asked to be a 4. So there's some things that have to be worked out that only time can, you know, make it a little easier for everybody involved. But it's certainly something fun to look forward to.
For sure. Well, that's interesting. So as far as shutting down Embiid, they literally shut him down. He didn't even participate, like, in practice scrimmages or practices or anything. Shut down meant
no.
Shut down, huh?
Shut down, then shut down. Absolutely. So,
wow.
Yeah. So when he's now I know he worked out with some of the guys they've been bringing in, looking at for the draft. And keep in mind, they have 5 second-round picks in addition to that number 3 pick. And he's been a participant in some of those workouts, and he sometimes does work out with Nerlens. But his first opportunity really to play 5-on-5 basketball is going to be in the summer.
Yeah, I can't wait to see that. So I watched the lottery last night. We all saw what happened. Minnesota getting the first pick. The Lakers jumping up for the second pick. The Knicks dropping to fourth. The Sixers are at number 3. Now, Dee, how confident are you that the Lakers and Timberwolves are going to go big and take Towns and Okafor? And if that happens, what will the Sixers do?
I think they do go big, Minnesota and L.A., just because I do think it's a need for both of them and that they are the perceived 2 best players in the draft. I would say that the Lakers possibly would have gone after a Russell, except for that Clarkson really had a great year. I mean, he made the first team all-rookie this year as well. So I think not that you can't always better your talent at any position, but if you have a chance to add a big man that you think can, you know, has some special talents like an Okafor does, I think Towns will go number 1 overall. So for the Lakers, that would be Okafor. Then I think you do that. And then what I think the Sixers, I know it seems too obvious for a team that doesn't like to tell you anything, and they're not the ones saying it, but I think just the fact that those 3 names of Towns, Okafor, and D'Angelo Russell are the ones that are said to be the best 3 players in this draft, I think then you say, well, it's a need this team has. He'll be the best player on the board at that point. Sounds like a no-brainer to me.
Yeah, D'Angelo Russell, he can play both guard positions. He's 6'5" out of Ohio State. He's just 19, but he averaged 19.3 points, 5.7 rebounds, and 5 assists per game. Decent shooter at 45%. He can shoot the 3 as well, right?
Yep, and shooting the 3 is a big difference, because if you're saying that was part of, and they never have said that, but if you look and identify, that is one thing Michael Carter Williams did not do, and if this kid can come in and already be ahead of the game with that, then I think you've upgraded at a position that's very, very key in this league.
Now, there's also the kid from who played in China. He's not from China, but Emmanuel
Mudiay,
yep. Who's also 19, also 6'5". I understand he's super athletic, but he will turn the ball over occasionally. He's dynamic. He's a bit of a slasher, but not as good a shooter as Russell. What do you know about this guy?
Yeah, that he can't shoot.
Yeah.
but he is a great athlete, and he's great in the open floor. He'll attack the rim. I did speak to him last night. Very nice young man. I think there's people who are really high on his potential and that athleticism, but I don't know how you could choose that if both D'Angelo and Mudiay are both on the board when the other just is ahead of the game and has a little more proven, and being at the stage of where you are with your rebuild, that it's time to turn a corner, I think the other guy would be the guy I would pick.
Well, Dee, sticking with the draft thoughts, you know, with a number 3 pick and all those second rounders, do all those second rounders have real benefit, do you think, with being that there's so many and being the way that the roster shuffled so much this year? Is this just a setup for more shuffling if you try to add a whole bunch more second rounders, or is there real value there?
Well, if you keep in mind, there were 2 very good players that they got out of this last year's second round. One guy is no longer here, and that's KJ McDaniels. And then, of course, Jeremy Grant was a starter by the end of the year. So those 2 came at number 32 and 39. This year they have 35 and 37, which I think in Sam Hinkie's mind, that's as close to the first round as you like, because you don't have to give them the rookie contract per se. You can do something a little different, and you might still get every bit the talent of what is at the end of the first round. So I think those are key spots. Now, you say, do the others become, you know, what do you do with them? Well, Jordan McRae, he was one of the late ones last year. He went to Australia. the year before, Kissemi, he's the guy from Iran, you know, he still plays overseas. So they have shown that they will, I hate calling it stashing guys overseas, but that is what they are willing to do and let guys develop their game and see if you can become an NBA player. I think the ones in the 30s matter most to them, but they do use those other picks / players as chips in trying to make other deals.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be interesting. All right, let's pull out your crystal ball, Dee. Let's say the Sixers do take D'Angelo Russell. Tell me the Sixers starting five this October.
The Sixers starting five would be Joel Embiid, Nerlens Noel, Jeremy Grant at the three, Covington at the two, and D'Angelo at the point.
I'm
okay
with
that.
Tony
Broughton would be my first guy off the bench, with a Hollis Thompson, the ability to, you know, still make a shot, maybe change the momentum of the game, that kind of thing.
Hey, any chance the Sixers go out and sign a decent free agent this summer?
I don't see it, but there's some of the belief, you know, of course they have all the cap space that they do, that they could do it, but I see them looking at their, quote, and I keep using the word, rebuild and saying, it's not where we're at. They are further along, yes. Did they have that kind of cap space last summer? Absolutely. Did they use it in free agency, that the kind of free agency that you and I are talking about? No. And I think you will see a similar thing happen this year.
Well, you kind of led right into to what I was going to ask you. As far as the five-year plan, three-year plan, seven-year plan, whatever you want to call it, are you feeling like they're on track, ahead of track, or how do you see this playing out? Is it for real?
Well, I can see why people are excited with adding the third pick, and you're going to get to see Joel Embiid. Nerlens already showed you that he has some capabilities there, and you did go out and find a Robert Covington. So there's some real hope to have faith in the future. I see that. I actually was just looking up, you know, because I don't see it happening as a big jump next year. You had 19 wins, then 18 wins. You know, what is realistic for next year? I mean, I think getting to 30 would be hard, but maybe I'm the crazy one. I'm looking at, like, what OKC once did. They had Kevin Durant as a rookie, 20 wins, 23, and then they did that third year make the jump to 50. I think when I look, and even Milwaukee had the worst record last year in the NBA, and this year they were a playoff team. So maybe it is. I just don't see the experience or the veteran leadership that I think has to be in the mix for that major jump to actually come to fruition.
I think the one thing in their favor, the fact that they're in the East and there's only, you know, three or four really good teams, they got a shot to get in there at number six or seven or eight.
Yeah, I know people say that, but everybody else is out there trying to get better too. I mean, you know, that just seems like that happens. You know, I know that we can identify who's at the top, obviously the two that are still playing. Chicago never stands pat. Washington is on the rise. That we saw in the postseason. I don't think Toronto is satisfied with how good the regular season was, how it ended for them. Injury certainly played a part. So once you start in Milwaukee, you know, Jabari Parker was hurt. He'll come back healthy. You know, there's just a lot of teams. I know how bad people look and say the East is, and it's a possibility. But in bad, there's also teams that are trying every bit as hard as you are to get better, and some of them are in just further along in their, you know, push for that to happen than the Sixers are.
It's going to be fun to watch. Dee, I'm sure you've been watching the NBA playoffs. Other than maybe the Clippers blowing that 3-1 series lead against the Rockets, any big surprises, and what should we expect in the conference finals?
Any big surprises? I've been, I don't know if I would say surprised, so to speak, but I was really impressed with how the Warriors, when they were challenged slightly, I would call, that they realized they had to turn their defense up to what really the defense that statistically you could have looked and seen that they did play through the regular season, even though everybody looks at them and thinks only about their offense. So I think that was impressive. I mean, I love watching Steph Curry play. That's just, he's just amazing. And I know that the Rockets will try to get very, very physical with him. I thought he did a great job of, like, not letting that happen in the first game. I thought I was impressed with Washington. Oh, my gosh. And Paul Pierce, you know, the thing of what he can still do. That was an amazing series to watch. So, I mean, I love the NBA. And so, they're, you know, the postseason to me is you're watching the best still play. And people who don't think this is an exciting game, they probably just don't, you know, want it isn't their thing, or they don't watch enough of it to be able to appreciate just how good this basketball is.
Dee, I have one last question for you, and back to the Sixers for just a second. And I don't know that this is as much a question as a comment, but the one thing that really impressed me, even with the, you know, the revolving door roster that they had, is they seemed to play hard every single night. And it didn't matter who was playing. And, you know, some nights they just weren't near as good enough, you know, as good as the opposition and got beat up pretty bad. But it always seemed like they put out great effort. And I think Coach Brown probably deserves a lot of credit for that.
I would credit Coach Brown and really his whole staff. And that is, you know, a lot of jargon gets thrown around when, you know, we're trying to develop talent and uncover keepers or identify keepers. But when they say they're trying to build a culture, I would give them tremendous amount of credit for not only saying that, but like putting in place a program with real things in front of guys, whether it's their career best fitness, diet, sleep, looking at, you know, specific things with video, getting shots up in a gym, understanding that, you know, it's not just coming to the gym for a two-hour practice every day. It's a lifestyle, just like you and I have a job that it becomes, you know, it's what you do. That they have really been able to explain that to a group of really young guys, if you think about it. I mean, there's really, after Jason Richardson, pretty much everybody is, seems like under 25 for me. And, you know, that's the culture Brett Brown said he wanted to bring here, wanted to institute. Sam Hinkie's given him the tools to be able to do that. And guys seem to not only buy in, but really enjoy being in that kind of environment.
Hey, Dee, we're going to put you in the hot seat just as we did last October in just a couple of minutes. I just have one other question, though. I know you covered his whole career, so I wanted to ask you, did you get to see the Iverson documentary yet on Showtime?
I was invited a year ago when they had the documentary, though I don't know how Showtime, like, maybe polished it, so to speak. It's the same documentary, but maybe slightly altered either with, you know, video or enhanced, so to speak, I guess is the right word. So, yes, I got to see it, not when it was on Showtime the other night.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm about three quarters into it. It's actually pretty good. So if people haven't seen it, I do recommend it.
Oh, absolutely. And there's, it's, you know, I think people should know, and like any story, there can be, you know, one-sided. Was it down the middle of the road? It wasn't meant to be like that. It was just really to kind of show a side of Allen and really some things that people didn't know or had never heard people talk about, or even some video from back in his days as a younger person, or even him talking about his experiences in the way that he does in that in the documentary. I think it's definitely worth it, especially if you were an Iverson fan. I always enjoy listening to him talk. I really do.
Absolutely.
Well, Dee, as you know from your earlier visit to the show, all of our guests get to sit on Chet's hot seat in our 10 and 5 segment. So are you up for this again? He's ready to beat you up, I think.
Yeah, go ahead. I don't know how I'll do, but I'm ready.
Oh, you'll do great.
Well, you did great. You did great in October, and I'm sure you'll do fine again. So let's do it. All right, D-Line, and we talked about it during the program, but again, now that we know the Sixers have the third pick in the draft, whom are they most likely to select?
D'Angelo Russell.
I agree, and I'm fine with that. Number two, another crystal ball question. The NBA playoffs are down to their final four, if you will, Hawks, Cavs, Warriors, Rockets. Who's going to win it all this year?
It won't be easy, but I'm going with the Warriors.
Okay. I'm rooting for them, actually. Here's one for you, Dee. How has Twitter changed the sports reporting biz over the last 5 years?
It has made, if you thought your job was 24/7, it's now 48/14. You know what it is? It makes it difficult to sort out what is real, what is humor, and what is rumor. So you do spend probably too much time looking at your phone, or more time than you'd like, but feeling it that if you don't, you're missing something. So, and when you're missing something, somebody else is getting something, and it becomes a revolving door. But I do think it's important to distance yourself from it at times and, you know, write what you see, write what you think, and don't always let it be guided by what's popular on social media.
Excellent. All right. Excluding Charles Barkley and Allen Iverson, they're too obvious. Who are some of your favorite Sixers to interview since you've been covering the team?
Excluding those two, Kyle Korver for sure, Lou Williams absolutely, Drew Holiday, let me go back to my earlier, Aaron McKee. But Lou was definitely at the top in terms of enjoying talking to him on a daily basis.
Okay.
And right. I would say yes.
Speaking of Sir Charles, he and his colleagues just re-upped with TNT, new contracts. What makes Charles so good on TV?
His sincerity, his ability to know that show is not, while I think he makes the show is because it's them together and their camaraderie and how they play off one another. But his realness, his quick wit, and I think, again, his ability to not make it all about him and yet still have such a great sense of humor about, you know, basketball life, and he speaks off the top of his head in a way that just really translates to the people who are watching.
Yep, you got it. You're halfway there, Dee. Number six, Greg Popovich is widely considered to be the best coach in the NBA. Who's number two on that list?
Wow. I would have put Pop first. Let's see. Number two. And he's got to be active, I'm assuming?
Yes, active coach.
Active. Okay. Wow. I can't believe I'm thinking this hard about that. Because so many of them are so early in their careers, if you think about it right now, between like the Steve Kerrs, the Hornacek, the Budenholzers, those kind of guys. So I would have said Scotty Brooks, quite frankly, except that he just got let go, obviously.
Yeah, believe it or not.
So, you know what? I'll say Thibodeau.
Okay. Can't argue with that. Number seven, the 76ers unveiled some new logos recently. The primary logo isn't drastically different, but there's also one with Ben Franklin in red, white, and blue Sixers garb dribbling with his left hand. Do we know that Ben Franklin was good at going to his left, and how was his shot?
You know, with all due respect, and I know that we live in a day and age when marketing and logos and art are, you know, obviously everybody has, used to be just one color, you know, you had a home and away, and now everybody has an every other Sunday outfit and a black uniform. So logos for me, I get that they try to involve, you know, where you're from and make it into something with your team, but I kind of stay away from trying to figure out where it all springs from.
I heard that Ben was electric on the court, by the way.
Excellent.
Number eight. Sorry. Number eight. David Letterman's 33-year career in late-night television is ending this week. Who was your go-to guy among those late-night talk show hosts?
Oh, I always watched Letterman. I actually liked Letterman before when he was on NBC. Do you remember those
me too.
Years?
Yeah, late night.
That's probably really when I became hooked on him. And I would say I probably didn't watch a whole lot of Carson because that really, you know, his best years were not when I was watching late night television. So Letterman was my guy. I was never really a big Leno fan, though I did get to go to shoot a commercial when I worked for the NBA. He did one of those I Love This Game for me, and I did get to see his initial first ever show.
Oh,
so I would
nice.
Always kind of keep an eye on him because I had met him. But Letterman's mine. my guy.
Number 9, D. Last fall, we talked about the fact that you were a golfer and that you had a hole in one last August at Rolling Green. How's your game these days?
I played very well today. Thank you for asking. I'm playing pretty well, actually. Not bad. I haven't played as much as I'd like. But right when the season ended, I went to Alabama for like 3 days. And there's the Robert Trent Jones Trail. There's about 8 courses in a pretty easy hour drive time around the Birmingham area. And then I got to play a place called Shoal Creek that used to host the PGA event. Actually, they had that is a beautiful spot. So I would say my golf game is very much appreciated by me, and I love that I get to play, and I love every time I can see a new course. And yeah, doing all right.
Good deal. And finally, lots of candidates from Hoosiers to Glory Road to Blue Chips to White Men Can't Jump. What is your favorite basketball movie?
Favorite basketball movie? Probably Hoosiers. Yeah, probably the one I've seen the most for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be a no-brainer for me.
Can't go wrong with that. D. Lynam, great job on our 10-5 hot seat again, and thanks again for making a return visit to Philly Press Box Radio.
Thank you for having me. Have a great weekend.
All right, D. Thanks again for taking your time, and we look forward to talking to you again.
Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
Bye-bye.
All right. Well, Chet, let's get our trivia question out there for our listeners to think about before we go to our break. And then we'll come back and we'll talk about a couple of the things Dee had to say, and we'll move on and talk to Flyers and Phillies. All right?
Sounds good.
Here we go. This is to win the rookie photo, 8x10, signed of former Sixer Kyle Korver, courtesy of Carl's Cards and Collectibles. In the crazy 2014-15 regular season, where 15 different players played in 20 or more games, what player played in the most games? That makes sense?
For the Sixers, yes.
For the Sixers. In this crazy 2014-15 regular season, where 15 different players played in 20 or more games, what player played in the most games for the Sixers?
Mm-hmm.
All right. We'll thank our sponsor right quick, shopforkisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation, by logging on to www.shopforkisses.org's website. You become connected to over 3,000 stores, including all the big ones you already shop at. Every purchase made gets you cash back, and each purchase benefits the Kisses for Kyle Foundation, which helps families dealing with childhood cancer throughout the Delaware Valley. If you have any questions, contact Bob Sullivan at bobsullivan.shopcom@gmail.com or give him a call at 484-319-8043. And, Chet, remember last week I told you how I utilized this site and got some cash back?
Yes.
Well, I actually did it again. I went through the site, went to the Travelocity section of the All Stores tab, booked my vacation for the fall, and did it all through there and got 4% cash back on my total hotel and airfares.
Not bad.
It works. All right. So let's talk. Let's follow up on some of Dee's comments. What do you think overall? She's a little. I think she was a little bit reluctant to say the plan is in full gear. What do you think?
Yeah, I think she is reluctant a bit, but I'm probably more optimistic than she is. I think they're gonna win 30 games this year, and they just might sneak into the playoffs. Now, you're not going to do any damage as a 7 or 8 seed in the NBA, maybe in the NHL, but not in the NBA. But I think they could be better than she and some other people expected, assuming that, you know, they don't make any more crazy trades. I think the time for acquiring assets is over as far as, you know, future assets. Now you want to get assets who can actually go out there and play right now. So, you know, hopefully Noel will continue to progress. Joel Embiid will be the real deal. They'll play together. They'll draft, you know, D'Angelo Russell or whomever to play guard. And Covington will show that he wasn't a fluke this past season. I think they could definitely win 30 games, maybe even 33, 34 in the season ahead. I think the plan is well underway, and I want to see some definite progress this season.
Well, I think the key to me is, you know, just like we talked about with the Eagles at draft time, I feel the same way here. It just depends to me what they do on draft night. How do they get through the second round? As she was saying, with those couple picks in the 30s, did they get some real good players that can help them out? And what kind of move will they make, whether through free agency or however, to get that veteran leadership? And she mentioned that, and it's absolutely critical. And right now they don't have that. If they kind of putter around that just a little bit this time, then I think we're still in for another slow season. Definitely be better, but I don't know if you get up into that 30 wins if you don't fill some of those gaps. So yep. I think that will be real interesting to see. But I can tell you this, I'm real excited to see Embiid and Noel on the court together.
Oh, I am too. And I got to tell you, I'm happy that the Sixers stayed at number 3, because if they moved up to number 2, then they would have been tempted to go for one of the bigs, Towns or Okafor, and that could, you know, mess everything up, because they really need a guard, but they would have felt compelled, I guess, to take one of the two best players, or supposed obvious two best players. So I'm kind of glad that they stayed at 3, and, you know, most people say they're going to take Russell. I don't think they'd take Moutier, but I think it's going to be Russell, and most people think he's going to be a pretty darn good player, even though he's not quite as athletic as, you know, some of the other guys. So I'm happy they're at number 3. I hope they do take Russell, and I'm ready to see this team in action come October, November.
Yeah, the other thing I was really surprised to hear, and, you know, was the comment about the shutdown, you know, with Embiid. I mean, to the fact that he hasn't even practiced with these guys just really surprises me, and, you know, because I thought that he was probably working towards being healthy after all this time, and to at least be out there running around getting into some basketball shape, but apparently not.
Yeah, or else they were just being, you know, extra careful with him, which is always a possibility. They did it with Noel the previous season. They probably could have, you know, dusted these guys off and gotten ready to play in February or March, but just decided to wait and start anew in the summer or whatever and get them ready for that following season. So I'm not overly concerned about that. As long as he's in shape, he's got the ability, and he will be in the summer league. So I think he'll be ready, and it's a long season. So even if he's not in, you know, 100% basketball shape, conditioning-wise, come October, November, I think he'll be fine by January.
Yeah, you know, I hope so. And there's definitely going to be a little more buzz around the Sixers this year, and it's certainly needed. As we've said many times on this show, basketball is a great sport in Philadelphia that's just been in the – well, I don't want to say been in the tank, but it's been in the tank for quite a while now. But it's always been a great sport, and I'm hoping that this all turns out well for them.
And how about Dee saying that one of her favorite guys to interview and talk to was Kyle Korver, and he's a guy that you like as well, I believe.
Absolutely, and he's our trivia guy, so if we can get a winner, someone to call in and answer that trivia question, they're going to get a Kyle Korver autographed picture, so hopefully that happens.
But yeah, hey, and that number again, 929. What's that?
The number is 929-477-2855.
There you go.
929-477-2855. We need to throw that question out there one more time?
Yes, please do.
All right. In the crazy 2014-15 regular season, where 15 different players played in 20 or more games, what player played in the most games for the Sixers? So while we're waiting on that, Chet, let's shift gears and get to the ice, as the Flyers made some news by making Dave Hextall the 19th head coach. He has an outstanding college resume, similar to his counterpart at the NovaCare Center, but no championships. Are you on board with the hire or not so much?
Well, like pretty much everybody else who follows the orange and black, Bill, I was certainly caught off guard by the hiring. A lot of folks thought they were going to target the Red Wings' Mike Babcock, but that apparently didn't happen. And we got a guy that we, frankly, had to do an internet search on to find out just who the heck he is and what he's all about. But that being said, as you noted, Hakstol's got an impressive resume. Almost everyone who's played for him speaks highly of him. He's clearly a smart guy. And the more I've thought about it, the more I like the move. For one thing, they didn't go back to the pool of former NHL coaches or guys with Flyer ties. I was really glad to see they didn't do that. They're trying something a bit different. And to answer your question, yes, I'm on board with it. Hopefully, I'll still be on board with it come next May.
Well, I'm kind of up in the air. You know, I guess I can't like this one and not like the Chip Kelly signing very much because they're very similar, except that I think in the Flyers' case, they have a much younger roster, and they're going to bring up a lot of kids here in the next couple of years or next year. You know, they're thought to have some good players down in the farm system and maybe a younger co-NHL coach. The guy's not necessarily a young man. Maybe he forms these guys into something right quick, but, boy, I you know, if you can't get Babcock, I don't know where you were going to go, and I'm with you. I didn't want to see a retread guy come in. So I'm going to have to take a wait and see. But like I said, I can't love this one when I didn't love the Kelly one. So we'll see how it goes. But I think it's going to be interesting for the orange and black for sure.
Yeah, it certainly is. And Hextall and Hakstol, you know, working together will definitely make for some interesting headlines, if nothing else.
Absolutely. Well, what's your take on the playoffs? I've actually been watching the playoffs, Chad. As you know, I love hockey. I love Flyers hockey, but I don't much like watching anybody else. I hope everybody else loses but the Flyers.
Yeah, I'm more of a provincial guy myself, and so when the Flyers aren't in it, I don't pay quite as much attention. The only game that I watched an extended period of was the Game 7 Rangers series last week, and I did watch most of the third period and overtime, and I saw them winning that one to advance. So I think you were rooting against the Rangers, if I'm right?
If the Rangers were playing, I was rooting against them.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I didn't really have a rooting interest, so you know, it's tough for me to watch any kind of game when I don't really care who wins, but it was some exciting hockey, and you know, good for the Rangers and all their fans. They're still in the hunt.
Well, you know what's interesting, being down here in Lightning territory, the Lightning fans are just like talking just like Flyers fans. They listen to these national broadcasts and they think, these guys hate us. You know, these broadcasters hate us. They're all against us and this and that, and that. And that's all I keep hearing out of Tampa Bay Lightning fans. But, you know, if you look at it, if you're the networks or the NHL and you're going to have a Tampa, Anaheim, or New York, Chicago Stanley Cup final, what do you think the NHL wants and what do you think the network wants?
Oh, yeah, I know. I hear you. I see what you're saying. I know.
And in reality, Anaheim and Tampa may be the two best teams.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
You know, when you listen to these guys do the games, and I've only listened or watched a little bit of the Chicago-Anaheim series, but I have actually watched a little more of the Lightning and the Ranger series. You know, it is just as one-sided as we always complain about from Pierre and the boys.
Yeah, I think Al Morganti's pick was Anaheim to win it all, so we'll see if Morganti knows what he's talking about.
Well, interesting. All right, well, hey, let's slide over and let's talk about the red-hot Fightin' Phils, Chet. They won 6 out of 7. They let one get away from them last night that they very well could have won, but what do you make of it? You got them at that 100-plus losses. I've got them at 99. Can it stay?
All right, now before this streak, keep in mind they were 11-23 and they were on track for about 54 wins or something like that. Now that's a bit different, but the streak started with 2 wins over the Pirates to earn a split of that 4-game home series. The Pirates have not played as well this year as last year. And then the Phils continued their win streak with a weekend home sweep of the D-backs and a win over the Rockies in Colorado on Monday. The D-backs and Rockies, the two teams fighting for the basement in the NL West. So there's that. But even so, a six-game win streak is pretty impressive for a team that, as you noted, I predicted would have been losing 102 games this year. What I like is that Ryan Howard's continued to pick it up lately. Chase Utley's gotten off the schneid a bit. I think he was 5-for-12 in the number six slot, but now he's back at number three tonight. I don't know why. Mikel Franco, after an 0-for in his first game, has looked pretty darn good since then, with five RBIs in the four games since. Looking pretty good at third base. I know he did have an error last night, though. By and large, the pitching's been pretty good, until last night at least. So, lots of positives over the past week. I'm definitely surprised and even a bit impressed, dare I say.
Yeah, and, you know, and even last night, Aaron Harang pitched real well. The bullpen collapsed on him and cost him that game. But Harang, I think he gave up three unearned runs. That was all he gave up last night, and he's got an ERA under two. Hamels is pitching well again, and that was just a matter of time. He just had a couple bad outings, and he does that at the beginning of every year. He's going to be solid.
Yes, he does.
Jerome
yep.
is pitching halfway decent. Now that they've lost Billingsley, we'll have to see how that all pans out, because you can't keep running the Sean O'Sullivan's out there and expecting to win in the big leagues, I don't think. But the bullpen has been adequate. Jake Diekman's a bit of a mystery because he has not pitched well. And I thought it was interesting the other night when they brought in Kenny Giles to pitch the ninth inning, and I believe it was a 4-0 game, and he couldn't get the job done. You know, they ended up having to bring Papelbon in to close it out. People just don't understand that closer job, whether it's a save situation or not, is an extremely difficult job. And I know there's a lot of people out there that don't like Jonathan Papelbon, but he's a master at it and one of the best ever. And you can't just say get rid of him because he's a bum and replace him with somebody, because it just doesn't work that way. It's not that easy.
Yeah, and he's really been a trooper this year, too. He's gone out and done his job. He hasn't created any controversy. He hasn't said, I want to be traded. You know, he realizes what the situation is. You know, maybe he's just putting on a good face, because if he does get traded, he wants to have more suitors, and they'll see that he is a team guy and all that. But give him credit. He's really done a good job this year. And as you said, Giles has struggled a bit in some situations, like that ninth inning game you mentioned last week. And even in a couple of his eighth inning spots recently, he has not pitched as well as he did last year or earlier this season. And by the way, a big test coming up for the Phillies after this Rockies series. They continue the road trip with series in Washington against the Nationals this weekend, and then up at Citi Field against the Mets. So they're going from playing two of the worst teams in the National League to playing two of the better teams in the National League and a couple of the National League East contenders. So I think we'll learn a lot more about the Phillies and whether this was a fluke or not over the next week.
Yeah, and what's your it's been 2 weeks since we've talked about this, so what's your take now on your man, Freddie Galvis? That average has dropped down a little bit. He's starting to
not
cool
much.
Off a little bit.
A little bit.
Is
but
he still your all-star
still
shortstop?
Still certainly over 300, and he's not going to get voted into the All-Stars, but if he's hitting over 300 like he is now still and playing solid defense, which has never been a problem, he could be in addition to the All-Star team. You never know, but still, that's a long way off. We're still in May, so we're talking about nearly 2 months from now, the All-Star game. But I think Freddie's been solid, and I'm really liking the fact that Franco is up now playing third base. It's a lot of the other positions I'm worried about for the future. You know, Carlos Ruiz, that catcher, is not getting any younger. They don't really have a lot of depth there or guys coming up. And the outfield, while Revere and Odubel Herrera have looked pretty well offensively, neither of them is going to give you any power. I mean, if they hit three home runs this season between them, it'll be a minor miracle. You got to have one or two guys in the outfield who are going to give you some pop. And, beyond Ryan Howard at first base, maybe Franco at third, we'll see. There's just not a lot of power on this club, and sometimes you do need those guys who are going to put some balls over the fence.
Absolutely. Well, hey, speaking of that, we haven't talked about this because it happened after our last show. What was your thought about sending Cody Ashey to the minors? I mean, to me, they knew Franco was on the horizon. What in the world were they thinking about to have to wait until the start of the season to tell somebody to go learn a different position?
Why
would they have not gotten together at the end of last season and said, Cody, go home for the offseason and learn to play the outfield, and Franco, you go learn to play first base or some other position too, because you're both young guys who are part of this future, and we need you both in the lineup, and you both play the same position. So I really don't understand. This is one of those management things that is really beside me on this. I can't figure it out.
Oh, yeah, and I think Amaro deserves some blame for this one. As you said, he had plenty of time to think about this last fall and over the winter. You know, why not have Ashy work on this in the off season, play winter ball or whatever if he needed to, or more of it in spring training? It's kind of an insult to him, a guy who's, I think now, somewhat a proven major leaguer, to be sent down to the minors to play another position just because management screwed up as far as forethought. So it was another curious move by Phillies management, and I hope it works out for Ashy, because it certainly looks like Dominic Brown's never going to be the guy that we thought he might be 2 years ago, and they do need a little pop in the outfield, like I said.
Absolutely, and I'm with you. I just don't get this one. It's really beside me that they let this happen, because, I mean, anybody could see it. And the whole Dominic Brown thing, you know, I don't know how long they're going to tolerate him down in AAA. If they thought he could play, I would think they would have brought him up. But Jeff Francoeur is playing out there, for crying out loud. So if they if they thought Brown could play, I think he'd be up playing.
Yeah, I agree. And speaking of the minor leagues, I saw Aaron Nola had another fine effort today, 7 scoreless innings, his ERA down to 1.54. He's still in Reading, but he's going to be maybe in Lehigh Valley very, very soon, and maybe up with the big club before long, because he's certainly doing what everybody expected from him. So Aaron Nola looking like the real deal down in the minors.
Yeah, and I think as long as you don't overuse him, you know, and give him too many innings in his first go-round, you know, last year he pitched more innings than he's ever pitched before, because he pitched his college season and then came and pitched in the minor leagues. As long as you don't, you know, kill the guy right out of the chute and use him smart, bring him up and let's let him go. Let him get some AAA time, and if he does well there, let's bring him up, and he's the future. Let's go. Let's put him in there and let's see what he can do.
I'm ready.
All right. Well, hey, Chet, our friends, as you know, at Carl's Cards and Collectibles in Havertown are celebrating their 20th anniversary. And, you know, Carl keeps rolling them in. I talked to him the other day. He had flyers and NHL Hall of Famer Bill Barber in the store on Saturday. He said it was a terrific turnout. And the rightful Reggie Leach. The Reggie Leach will be there on June the 13th. And he expects another great turnout for there. You know, the Broad Street Bullies never get old around Philadelphia.
I'm hoping to see the rifle. I told you that, June 13th. It's on my calendar.
All right. Well, hey, in between now, Carl has added former Philly Don Money on June the 6th. And, you know, Don Money's an interesting guy around Philadelphia, because he didn't have a giant career, a stellar career, but he spent a lot of time here and is, for whatever reason, is a crowd favorite in Philadelphia.
Well, I'll tell you one reason. Don Money hit the first home run at the Vet in 1971.
That is a fact. You were on it,
there,
brother.
You and you know what else?
As you know, go ahead.
A year later, he was traded at the end of the 1972 season to allow some guy named Mike Schmidt to play third base.
That's right. And that's not what he's famous for, though, I don't think. He's famous for that home run. That's what gets him signed in Veteran Stadium pictures, I believe.
Yes, indeed.
But, hey, as you know, Carl does a great job getting the guests in, and we hope everyone can support his efforts. And he has a Facebook page, a website, and he does a great job. And as you know, anybody that listens to our show, we keep updating this list every show, and he just keeps on bringing in great players for the fans to get an opportunity to meet.
He does indeed.
All right. Well, Chet, we're getting close to the top of the hour. We got about 5.5 minutes left. So let's talk about our parting shots for the week. What do you have?
All right. This one isn't sports related, Bill, but We are bidding farewell to a legend tonight as David Letterman steps down from the late-night TV world after a great 33-year career. And I have to tell you, as a young man in the early and mid-'80s, his Late Night with David Letterman show on NBC was a nightly ritual for me. There was just so much creativity, so much that was different from the other late-night talk shows of that time. Dave introduced the world to stupid pet tricks, stupid human tricks, and small-town news. He once wore a Velcro suit and flew into a wall. He donned a suit made of Rice Krispies and jumped into a giant bowl of milk. He would drop watermelons from a five-story window just to watch them crash onto the street below. He made minor stars of Chris Elliott as the guy under the seats, the NBC bookmobile lady, and, of course, Larry Bud Melman, one of my favorites. Dave moved to CBS with The Late Show in 1993 and blazed new trails while continuing some other popular segments like his nightly top 10 list and those stupid tricks. Dave's approach to hosting clearly paved the way for today's late-night hosts like Jimmy Fallon and Jimmy Kimmel. Just ask either one of those guys. Now, Dave is turning his microphone off, and I admit it, I will miss him. I was fortunate enough to be there several times for live tapings of his shows in the 80s and 90s, and you may have seen this on Facebook. I will forever treasure the late night with David Letterman sponge that his former announcer, Bill Wendell, gave me before a show one night back in the 80s, so thank you, Dave, for 33 years of laughs.
Outstanding, outstanding. Well, I don't know if I could top that, but I'm going the other direction. And I'm going back to sports, and I'm going to the farce that is the National Football League and the New England Patriots. And, Chet, here's my thoughts on this. I don't know if decreasing the inflation of the balls by one or two PSI makes a whole heck of a lot of difference in a football or a football game, but there's a rule, and there's a rule for some reason. Somebody thinks it's important to have an upper end and a lower end, and I understand that the guys teeter with that and all that. Well, they've decided that the New England Patriots broke the rule, so whether they did or whether they didn't, they've decided that they did. So what do? Is they throw the book, what looks like throwing the book at the New England Patriots. $1 million fine, a first-round pick, suspending of Brady, another draft pick, and all that. Well, you know, New England, they're going to fight it. They're all up in arms. They can't believe this is happening. Only to settle down, Mr. Kraft, and your billions of dollars, and decide, you know what, we're just going to take this one on the chin. We're going to take it for the team. Tom Brady's probably going to get his suspension decreased from four games down to two games. The $1 million to a billionaire is chump change. The number one draft pick is at the bottom of the round anyway. It's a harmless pick pretty much. So is the fourth round pick. So what does this all come out to? The NFL could say that they threw the book at the Patriots. The Patriots can say, we took it on the chin, so that the NFL and Roger Goodell saves face, and the penalty is meaningless. To me, it just shows that the National Football League is a farce.
All right. I can't disagree. And it makes you wonder about the future of Roger Goodell, because a lot of his decisions and moves have just been criticized by so many over the last couple of years.
Well, I think by doing what Robert Kraft does, Goodell saves face. He threw the book at him.
Yeah,
he threw the book at him, and he won. They're going to uphold all of it, except they're probably going to reduce Brady's suspension a little bit. Mm-hmm. So, interesting to me, but to me, it's all a joke. It's all underlying, and it's all just a game. The fans keep buying tickets to. All right, so hey, we're getting close to the end, so let's thank 76ers insider D. Lynam for joining us, as well as Carl's Cards and Collectibles for their continuing support of the show, Mary Flanagan, our marketing extraordinaire behind the scenes, and our sponsor, ShopForKisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. For Jim Chachesko, this is Bill Furman, hoping you enjoyed the show, and we'll join Philly Press Box Radio on Wednesday, June the 3rd. You can listen through our Facebook page at Philly Press Box Radio or on the internet at www.blogtalkradio.com/Philly Press Box Radio. You can also like our Blog Talk Radio page and get all of our updates as well. High hopes, Philadelphia sports fans.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6,